You are listening to motivational quotes and inspirational life stories from real life people just like you. I'm your host, Victoria Johnson. You can learn more about me and my number one best-selling book at victoriajohnson.org. It's time to share our experiences and motivate and inspire you. So let's get started. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another amazing podcast. Our guest today is a virtual executive coach, and she has the podcast called The Boss Lady Speaks. I'm really excited to check that out, and I'm sure you will be as well. I want to let you know her website. It is johannasawala.com. I'm going to spell that for you. johannasawalha.com. I really want you to take a minute and look at her website because she has some beautiful things going on there that are super inspiring. Again, it is johannasawalha.com. And Johanna has been a coach for over 25 years. So that is, as far as I know, before a coach was being called a coach. And what she did then and is still doing is igniting fires in powerhouse people. She works with C-level professionals. She really enjoys helping build entrepreneurial companies and transitioning in careers and building careers. And you know, the great thing about her is that she's got tons of experience and she has been featured in many, many different publications and by different institutions. And I could go on and on about it, but do check out her website for all of that information. And welcome with me to the show, Johanna Sawala. Welcome, Johanna.
Thank you so much, Victoria. Thank you for having me.
Well, it is absolutely my pleasure to have you here. And how great that you can do your work all over the world. We were talking and you live in Stockholm, but with the way that you have your business set up, you're able to work worldwide with different executives.
Right, exactly. And, you know, when I say executives, I also consider executives people who are people with a dream. Mm-hmm. You know, we can even call them wannabe executives, but I've done helped a lot of startups. And sometimes all they can do is have virtual C-suite. They're not at the level yet where they can have a board or anything like that. But then I get to be that partner, that Sancho Panza in the meantime, till they get to that level.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, we were talking about entrepreneurs earlier before we started recording. And so many entrepreneurs, you know, their business, it can be a very profitable and they can turn over a lot of money throughout the year, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they have a board or an executive. So thank you so much for making that clarification. And, you know, one thing that I really liked that you say is, I've been called a hard ass and it may be the sweetest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Right. Yes.
You know, I really like that. I think we all need somebody in our life who tells us the truth.
Definitely. Yeah.
Just the way it is. We like to focus on this podcast on overcoming adversity, things that have challenged us in our life, and so that we are able to move through that and move forward and fill other people with inspiration and hope, knowing that they too can overcome the obstacles and the things in their life that would sometimes, for some people, hold them back. But I love that you've got this great message on overcoming adversity. Sadly, you had to learn this lesson through a near-fatal biking accident. Can you tell us more about that?
I was 27. And I was biking in Manhattan and I was on my way to a singing lesson. That, in fact, was my first dream. I always wanted to be a singer and I had a long education doing it, only to realize that I didn't love the day-to-day actually working as mm-hmm. a singer. But I kept singing and my day job as a coach became my career and I loved that more in the end. But my point is I was biking on my way to my singing lesson with my singing teacher, Mary, through Manhattan, and I was hit by a truck. I think, you know what I think it was? I bet you, because I saw the truck. I saw it, and because I did make a left turn, but I, you know, extended my arm, and you made eye contact, you know, through the windshield with the driver. But I wonder if maybe he or she just bent down to, you know, to the radio, or was distracted and just kept going. Mm-hmm. So basically my right side, the right side of my body ended up between my bike frame and the hood. So my right side got crushed and I got thrown and I don't remember much, but I hit the pavement and they later told me that my bike helmet cracked in 5 places. So that would have been my head. So everybody wear a helmet.
Absolutely.
Wear a helmet. And given this is some time ago now, I'm not going to tell you exactly how long, but it's a while ago. Back then, you know, not everybody wore bike helmets. And I remember I had lent that helmet to a friend who biked every day to work because I was concerned about him and he didn't have money. And back then, you know, helmets were actually expensive. And so I'm like, take my helmet. I'm not biking right now. But then I started biking again and he gave me the helmet back. Maybe he got his own. I don't know. But this was the first day I wore the helmet again. So I don't know. I was watched over in so many ways. But what ended up happening was I broke my tibia, fibula, my lower right leg in half. I mean, it was dangling by whatever, meat. Like it was still right. Attached to my body, but only by flesh. And I broke my back, but luckily upwards, not across, because I would have been paraplegic, and I broke my pelvis in half. And the pelvis, you can't cast, right? But it is extremely painful because it's rattling loose in there. So it was a mess, and I was in intensive care for 10 days and ultimately had about 5 surgeries, I believe, and a lot of morphine. Mm-hmm. So those are the details of what happened, practically speaking.
Right.
But then, you know, you can have that in, you know, 10 days in ICU and tons of morphine. They took me off the morphine because you can get addicted. And that's when it all began. Because up to that point, I don't remember much. I was barely conscious and doped up. But when they took me off the morphine is when reality really hit. Mm-hmm. And that's when the real work began. And the real work, obviously, is, you know, physical therapy. But I would say that that's the easy part. That's the easy part. The hard part is the mental work. And at the time, luckily, I was really steeped in my own studies. I still am. But back then, when you truly start a career, I think there is a runway time when you have to maybe study extra much. You have to try everything out. You have to figure out your own method, your own approach to coaching, maybe your specialties and your strengths. And I was really steeped in it. And this was also before I had children. So I just gave all my time to it. And at the time when I got conscious, I think I made a choice, which I think is the first step. I made a choice. I was going to get well and I was going to restore fully. And the doctors told me that I might never walk again. And if I would walk again, I would walk with a limp. Mm-hmm. So I was in a wheelchair at 27, not that much fun, but I vowed I would walk and I wouldn't walk with a limp and I would be fully healed. And then the work began.
I was just going to say, I think that it's really interesting that you used the phrase, when I was conscious, I made a choice. Yeah. Because, you know, you have clearly made this conscious choice to be actually conscious in your own life and conscious of your own thoughts. And really, I know you talked about a motivational tip that you'd like to share with the listeners, and it is mind your mental hygiene. So making that decision, I will walk again, I will get well. Then what happened?
Well, then basically my training regimen started. Mm-hmm. So at the time I lived in a 20-story building, and it had that stairwell in the middle in between apartments. Mm-hmm. And once I got home and I had a nurse that came and tended to me, when you break bones and specifically your legs or your arms, they tell you weight bear as soon as you can, which is really difficult if you're not motivated because it hurts. Like running on broken bones really hurt. Like it hurts. So, but I ran up and down that stairwell every day, 19 flights, I think 5 times. Up and down, up and down, up and down. And I cried. I wept. It hurt. And that was after I had crawled to the bathroom, to go to the bathroom. It was on that level, from crawling to walking to running. But I also said it wasn't going to take a long time. I wasn't going to take forever doing this. And that's why I think when you have to overcome something, you have to look at it as a project and you have to be prepared that it's not going to be comfortable. You basically head into discomfort. You head into the discomfort. And so I did. And I ran those stairs. At the time, I was a raw food vegan. So it was my diet was very clean. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that everybody has to be a raw food vegan. I'm now a vegetarian. I but people can choose how they eat clean, right? Whatever, however people define that, if they're going to come back from an accident like mine. So I ate very clean. I ran those stairs. But I think probably the most important work I did was the visualizations. Mm-hmm. After, you know, training my body, I obviously also had to rest. And there was a lot of doing nothing for a long time. And I would lie there and I would see little worker people inside of my body go down to my leg, because my leg was probably the one that was most messed up, and it would like heal it. I would send little workers down to like work on it and heal it and build and build and build. And I saw it. I kept seeing it and seeing it and seeing it and building and building and building, building back the bone and building back the strength. And then I think it was 3 months later, I was going to go for a checkup visit, and I walked in to the doctor's office with crutches, but I walked 3 months later, not a year, not with a limp, nothing, 3 months later. And my roommate in the ICU, I had someone who lied on the other side of the curtain when I was in there. She had had a similar accident. Her name was Barbara. And I guess because we had been in at the same time, she was at the same on the same checkup schedule or what have you. Mm-hmm. But she was rolled in on the bed. In the hospital bed.
Oh my.
And I saw her and I thought, wow, like that's the difference right there. Mm-hmm. There was no difference in our circumstance. It was like everything was the same except for how I minded my mind.
Yes.
And how I went after it.
That's such a strong thing. I mean, when you think about it, people who are healthy, you know, like Olympic athletes, they use the visualization techniques. They use the, you know, on top of the physical training, the mind training. And so it makes perfect sense to me when you say it like that, that someone who is recovering from an injury or an illness could also use their mind in the same way.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And think about how much research has been done on this, and think about how much people have talked about this, but yet we don't have it. Most people, at least mm-hmm. that I speak to, don't have it as a regular practice.
Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that's, you know, one of the places too where having a coach really is beneficial. And whatever kind of coach that would be for people, you know, whether it is an executive coach or someone who works with entrepreneurs, or even just something as simple as our fitness, you know, working with a health and fitness coach and so on, because having someone to keep you on that path, you know, if you're not familiar with the path, I think could really make a difference in the outcome. I mean, obviously you had a very strong mind going in and had made a very strong decision that you were recovering, period.
Yeah.
And I love the visualization that you used, you know, sending those little worker people down there to heal the leg.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been such a strong visualization.
It's interesting what you said about having coaches, because I always have coaches and mentors. Anything that I want to learn well mm-hmm. or anything where I don't want to have a back door that I could slide out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we all have those escape fantasies.
Oh, absolutely.
I think most people who have a personal trainer, they probably know how to work out. That's not the issue. Mm-hmm. The issue is they show up. They show up and the expert is there, and the expert keeps them motivated and doing the right stuff. So I always take on coaches and mentors for things that I absolutely want to have in my life. But I know that left to my own devices is the crapshoot. Mm-hmm. I might get it, I might not. And I don't want to take that risk. I don't want to take that chance. Yes. So I think that's a good motivator for whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Even if it's overcoming something. I mean, I know people who've been stuck in grief for years and years. And obviously, grief is hard. But there's active grief and there's chronic grief. When you kind of don't get off a certain plateau, you really need to move on in the stages of your grief. And I know some people who get stuck, which is another form of overcoming, at least so you get to a place of peace. You're still allowed to be sad over loss. But I think being in active grief, let's say, forever is not healthy for you. So
yeah,
I digress. But you know what I mean. It's like there's so much we have to overcome. Life is cruel. Life is really hard.
Yeah. And you know, you make such a good point in terms of, you know, whether it is grief or whether it is a fitness coach, whatever it is. I mean, I this morning worked with my fitness coach because I am committed to becoming healthier physically. And I can tell you that I would have never in a million years done what I did with her today on my own. I would have quit after 10 minutes because it was really hard. However, I did it. I'm still alive. I'm here talking to you.
Right.
And, you know, and I know my body is better off for it. Just, you know, like you said, with the grief or with, again, with the business coaching. Now, you see, I think I'm getting the impression that you've done different types of coaching, just because I was reading in your bio that you were the senior vice president at a New York-based coaching firm, and that also that you taught at MIT and Stanford Business School, AOL, Sony. So was that all executive coaching, or were there different styles of coaching in there?
Well, the company coached there, and there were very many different constellations of coaches from that company that were like in those various companies. My role was always this remote one, and I love it. I actually love that role. Most of my clients that I've never met. And that's another thing that some people really want to learn how to do that. And of course, we can begin with like, do you know how to make a human connection? Like it starts there, like making a human connection. But it's also really great. Like your tagline, right? Like the laptop lifestyle. It affords you so much freedom, and it saves you travel time, and it's good for the climate and what have you. But I think that even when I speak to people who've been really successful, let's say, I mean, humans are humans. Don't we all deal with the same stuff? Fears and doubt.
Oh my gosh, it's so true. It doesn't matter what country or culture.
Yeah,
exactly. Stress, yes.
Yeah,
and all wanting to feel like we're enough, and all wanting to feel loved and to feel worthy.
Yeah, but I think there's one thing just to connect back to our main topic here, I guess, about overcoming is one of the most important things in learning to overcome is, can you confront what you're not willing to accept? And I'm not talking about that in a positive way, that like sometimes we just put our foot down and we go for it. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the stuff that you judge as unacceptable in your life or about people or about yourself. I think overcoming includes all of it. I think overcoming is letting life be the way it is and the way it isn't. And you're allowed to strive for things and be your best. But I think there's something about not judging life or what happens.
Yes. I agree with that.
Right? Like our minds are too small to grasp if there is such a thing as a reason for anything. But if there's a reason, like we don't have enough of a meta view to understand how come things happen the way they do. So to judge it based on our limited perspective is at best ignorant. I think that that's such a big aspect. Like if you want to overcome something, you got to be willing to accept things, accept all of it, exactly the way it is right now.
I think that's such a good point. And when we talk about the limited vision that we do have, because we just don't understand, I think a lot of us could look back in our life and say, you know, this happened and then this happened and then the best thing in my life happened. But we couldn't have directed that. Like we couldn't. I know for me, when I think of different things in my life, I wouldn't have projected that, you know, something that was a tragedy was going to lead me to the greatest love of my life or you know, those types of things. But again, because we do have that limited vision, just because of what we can comprehend, you know, there's that expression, you can't make this stuff up. Absolutely. Now I know that the thing that you really like to work with is helping people with igniting their purpose, not only through spirituality and mind-body connection, but also through actionable growth. So can you tell us more about what that term means to you, actionable growth?
Well, I think we're both in the coaching field. And I think that we have to be really clear what we're using, let's call it coaching for. Sometimes all you want might be just someone who listens committedly and deeply to you, which is fine. My expertise, though, is I want to see things happen. I want someone's insight to turn into reality, like a turn to action, turn to productivity, turn to money, turn to dreams come true. I want to see a direct correlation. And that is my style. I often say I hold people hostage to their greatness.
Oh, I love that. You hold people hostage to their greatness because you really are just helping them with their vision and their goals and their desires, but holding them accountable.
And that I won't let them out. They really have to fight me to let them out of that hostage situation because that's what they say they wanted.
Well, I mean, yes.
Maybe, right? Maybe in your training session this morning, like you were begging for mercy, right? Even if they beg for mercy, like, let me out of what I said I wanted. Let me out of my dream. And I said, you wanted this. You said. I didn't say. This is your dream. It's not mine. But I promised you. I made a promise. I would see you till the end. I see you at the finish line. And I'm running. Are you coming? Like, why did you stop?
Listening to you talk, I can feel your passion for your clients. And you've got so much spirit, which, you know, I believe was also a big part of helping you through overcoming the adversity in your life and the hard times that you went through physically and mentally with your accident. But I can tell you just from knowing you this short half an hour that I have known you is that I can really feel how committed you are to your clients. And that's just such a great thing, having that focus. I want to ask you one more question before we go. And that is the expression mental hygiene. You say, mind your mental hygiene. What would you describe mental hygiene to be?
Well, garbage in, garbage out. Like, really, what are you putting in your mind? I made a semi-promise because I think if you're accountable to yourself, you don't necessarily always have to make a promise that is what I do always, every time.
Yes.
But I would say I made a semi-promise to not read on my phone, the last thing I do before I go to bed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes wind down, you know, read the news. And I was thinking there is something to, like, the bed is for sleeping. Just, I am playing with it. But my point is that I'm going to play with what happens when I do that. Mm-hmm. I don't watch TV, but I do watch my phone. I do read the news on my phone. And I'm like, how is that different? You know, how is that different? Yeah. Same thing with my kids. Yeah, they get to play computer games, but my husband and I, we monitor what they're consuming for how long, not like helicopter policing, but we care about what they're ingesting. And we often ask, what are you learning? And I ask myself that too. What am I learning? And sometimes I too can get lost. Like, you know, I would say one of my only online, let's call it like media guilty pleasure is Bored Panda. Have you ever read that app, Bored Panda?
No, I haven't.
It's awesome. It's so great. It's just like funny tidbits from across the world. You know, just like these people did, you know, the record in the, you know, melon slinging. And like, it's just this random crazy things that people come up with and prank. And sometimes I would say they're insightful and they're funny, but sometimes I'm like, what am I learning? What am I learning here? And then if I catch myself, and I try to catch myself, then if I am not learning something or having an insight to something, I stop. Mm-hmm. Because I think that there's so much that we don't know we're ending up processing. If you just consume, you know, visuals and auditory and news and TV, like, I think your mind is just overworked. So that's what I mean by mental hygiene. And then cleaning it out with, running, meditation, whatever floats someone's boat. Mm-hmm. But it needs to be basically situations where you leave your mind alone.
Yes. I'm really enjoying that you shared that. And, you know, something as simple as garbage in and garbage out, and what are you consuming? And I think it also applies to the people that we surround ourselves with. You know, if we surround ourselves with people who, you know, basically it's a contest to see who's the most stressed or the most tired or, you know, then that becomes our language too. And so, you know, we really want to be careful, not only what we are consuming, but who we are surrounding ourselves with, and also what we're thinking. And, you know, telling ourselves over and over again, oh, I'm so tired, or, oh, it's one of those days. And, you know, that's not helping us and not setting us up for good mental hygiene. So I think it's great that you've shared that with us today. So thank you so much for that. And Johanna, I just want to close off our podcast today with a quote. This is from Gabrielle Bernstein, and I think it's really relevant to what we were talking about. And it says, I trust that my powerful intentions combined with my faith are enough to allow my vision to become my reality. And truly, with your accident, you did have powerful intentions, which you combined with your faith in what you could do and what you could achieve and what you were willing to accept. And it absolutely did allow your vision to become your reality. So I thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. Again, I want to mention your website because I really want the listeners to go check that out. It is johannasawalha.com. So johannasawalha.com. And thanks again for being on the show with us today, Joanna, or as you are known, Coach Jo.
Thank you so much, Victoria.
You're most welcome.
Thank you for joining us today. It is my true desire that you have been inspired and felt a sense of connection with the words being shared. If you have an inspirational story to share on how you have overcome adversity and created an exceptional life, please visit my website, victoriajohnson.org. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.